You're listening to The Outspoken Bible, a podcast from Bible 2020 with Fiona Stewart, Jen Robertson and Neil Glover.
Well, welcome to The Outspoken Bible. Over the next 5 days, we're going to be doing something a wee bit different. The Bible 2020 app has begun a new theme, God's Concern, looking at the book of Jonah. And we're going to be reading along with the passage day by day. So, join us every day for a new podcast, or wait till the end of the theme and listen to them all in one go. These podcasts are part of a suite of resources available on the Scottish Bible Society website. You can find out more at scottish.bible/Jonah. So that's scottish.bible/Jonah. So welcome. It's good to see you.
Good to see you and hear from you, Fiona. And I'm liking the thought that there are two ways of getting this. You can either listen each day, or we can now have binge listeners.
Yes, we can. That's true. And on that note, how are we getting on in lockdown? Is anybody just doing nothing but watching endless series of Netflix?
And nothing as productive as that.
No. I thought at the start of lockdown I'd be watching lots and lots of things I hadn't watched, but I found I really don't want to be doing that at all. I'm doing other things.
Is that because of the screen time, Jen?
I think so. I need to think about it more. Why? Because I'm quite surprised. Mm. And I think maybe it's because normally being at home is a contrast to the rest of my life. So I'm out doing stuff and then I come home and I want to just sit down and watch the television. But now my life is different from that. It's a different way of doing things. So when I do have time to myself, that's not what I'm choosing to do. I find it fascinating.
Yeah.
So I might bake a cake. I've had liver baked cakes in my life. I bake a cake every day nearly. Yeah.
So you might want to look at those exercise videos as well.
We are a house of cake bakers at the moment. In fact, I just had one. In preparing here, I had to go out for a minute and I took the chance to just help myself to a big fat slice of cake.
Oh, very nice. What type of cake was it, Neil?
It was an ombre cake, which I didn't know. Apparently the colours vary as you go up the cake.
Lovely.
Well, that's more advanced than I've achieved yet.
Yeah. Well, I made a chocolate and beetroot cake yesterday because it's my flatmate's birthday today, and so I made her a cake.
Do you know, like, I'm tempted to go, oh, that's lovely, beautiful. I hate those cakes that are all the weird flavours.
I've never had one. It might be revolting. It looks lovely.
It looks like, yeah, we've got a coffee place, so it's always like carrot and lime cake. It's like, oh, please.
Oh, lovely.
Exactly. Well, I can't do that.
I put raspberries on top, so hopefully, you know, some of your five a day. Two of your five a day, actually, your beetroot and your raspberry.
But as we're about to discover in Jonah, it's about living life outside of predefined categories. So
yes,
maybe we need
true.
To expand our cake experience.
That's true.
In fact, maybe the appropriate way to listen to this podcast is with an unusual cake.
Well, on that note, why don't we pivot into beginning to actually talk about the book of Jonah? I thought I'd just get a word in edgeways there between the cake mouthfuls. So we thought we'd begin this morning. So the verses in the first section we're looking at are the first six verses of chapter one. But rather than plunge straight into the details of the story, I thought it would be helpful for us to have a conversation, I suppose, about the background, the overview of what this tale is trying to do. It's quite a peculiar little book, isn't it, that sits in the middle of the kind of minor prophets, but is a well-known. I was reflecting the fact yesterday that you were very familiar with the story of Jonah. I'm not that familiar with what goes on in Obadiah, to be honest.
No.
But Jonah, because we come across it and because it's a story, we think we know it, but do we?
Yeah, and the contrast. So you could have also chosen, for your example of unknown minor prophets, you could have chosen Nahum there. Mm. And what's interesting about Nahum is that Nahum is, in a sense, Is it the anti-Jonah? It's definitely something very different from Jonah. So Nahum is the prophetic book which hates Nineveh. And it's all about the evils of the people of Nineveh with their military technology and their lack of conscience. And the fact that what we hate about the people from Nineveh is that they always win. Mm. And we're fed up losing to them. So that there is a lot of justified hatred in Nahum towards Nineveh.
Mm. And I feel Nineveh is something we know quite a lot historically about Nineveh, don't we? I mean, it strikes me that, you know, you go to the British Museum, you can look at various artifacts and things. There's been a lot of archaeological work done.
Which modern city is it closest to?
Oh, somewhere in Iraq, is it?
Yeah.
Aleppo?
No. It's Mosul. the Mosul. Kind of place where the fighting, there were a lot of, I think there was a lot of fighting around Mosul, wasn't there?
It's border country, isn't it? It's border, because it's on the Tigris,
Kurds,
isn't it?
The Kurds were Kurdish peoples and so on. In fact, I think ISIS, a lot of the ISIS fighting was around Mosul.
So we do know quite a lot about Nineveh, and so it was technologically pretty advanced. It was dominant, wasn't it, in its day?
And I think the atrocities they committed were horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading a bit about that other day, thinking of this podcast, and part of my experience of Jonah is having the story told and retold and singing Jonah Man jazz in a choir as a child. And really, I have to kind of kick that out of my head to really appreciate what the book is all about, you know, because the song that's in my head says, you know, Nineveh City was a city of sin. The jazzing and the jiving made a terrible din. Now, apart from the problem was a child, me being taught that that's what sin was, so let's put that to the side for a moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it really minimises what was going on in the context of the story. You know, the terrible treatment of people and annihilation of people was going on. But in my head, the story was this, Nineveh was a not nice place.
Yeah, and I suppose that it tunes in with, in some places of the Christian experience, the worst thing that you can engage in is excessive partying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
rock and roll. Excessive drunkenness and so on, when it's actually... in some sections of the Christian community, that what the worst you can do is engage in excessive partying and excess. Mm-hmm. But what this is really about is saying that, particularly Nahum sets this up, is that the worst you can do is be part of an economic empire which uses militarism in order to crush people.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of place that Nineveh is.
Yeah.
And so if you want a contemporary resonance, and actually how we felt about ISIS probably isn't too far away when ISIS was at its height. Mm-hmm. Probably 30 years ago, you could have asked people how they felt about the Russians. 70 years ago, 75 years ago, you could have asked people how they might have thought about Nazi Germany. So it's that sort of resonance that when you say the word Nineveh, it's probably not far from the sort of reaction you get if you say the word Nazi.
Yeah,
it's a similar revulsion.
And so into this atrocity, God sends this prophet Jonah, and we know the story on the surface, don't we? But before we came into this conversation, you were talking, Neil, about the sort of the surface and the depth of the story.
Yeah, I think this is a story in which the it works on a number of levels, and for me, it's another example of just how inspired the Bible is that. On one level, it's basically a story which says, do what God tells you, otherwise you're going to end up thrown into the bottom of the sea. And if you're lucky, God will rescue you, but you've got a second chance, you better use it. And it's a kind of classic conversion story. I was running away from God, and then I saw the light, and then I got fixed again. And on one level, it's about that. But actually, below the surface, it's something much more... unusual and strange and puzzling is going on. And you can see that in the fourth chapter, where we suddenly have all sorts of stuff that doesn't quite make sense anymore. Mm-hmm. But you see lots of hints of that underneath the surface, a bit like the whale under the surface of this raging ocean. You see that in chapters 1, 2, and 3. And one of the early hints that we're going to get of this is we're going to see the prophet of God running away from God. So suddenly a prophet's doing what a prophet's not meant to do. Mm-hmm. And then the Hebrew, this is shown by a Hebrew word, yarad, which means to go down. So in the Hebrew world, the very highest place is Mount Zion. So you always go up to Mount Zion, just like in, I suppose, kind of intellectual circles, you always go up to Oxford. You know, it's even greater than that. You always go up to Zion. And the place that you always go down to is Egypt. Yarad is the word to go down. Go down to Egypt because it's terrible there because you're in slavery and darkness. And what happens with Jonah is the prophet of God goes down. So first of all, he goes down to Joppa, and then he goes down into the ship. So the often translated in English, he went on board the ship. Actually, in the Hebrew, it's he went down onto the ship. Mm. And then later on, he goes down into the belly of the ship. And this is, in a sense, all of us is going away from the from the face of God, from the presence of God. Mm-hmm. And then the Hebrew wordplay carries on even more, because the word for go down, yarad, is very similar sounding to the word to go into a deep sleep, radam. So what's happening is Jonah is retreating and retreating and retreating from reality and from call. And this is a story about, in a very deep way, running away from the possibility of encounter with God. Mm. The contrast with this is that it's a bunch of pagan sailors who are saying to this Hebrew prophet, you need to talk to God here. You need to pray to God. And so what's happening is that the pagans are telling the prophet to talk to God. And that's one of the first kind of upside down moments that we're going to get throughout the whole of this book.
That's really interesting, isn't it? So we're looking out for going down. We're looking out for things being turned upside down and not being the way we expect. Yep. We're looking out for big things as well.
Yeah, right? there are lots of big things. So the Hebrew word is gedol. And I suppose this kind of points to the fact that this is a, and I mean this, I hope this doesn't sound insulting, that Jonah is a cartoonish book in the sense that everything is stretched to extremes and everything is big. So the wind is big and the storm is big, and later on the fish is big, and later on the city is big. And then Jonah, when the plant gets destroyed, Jonah has a big sadness, and sorry, he has a big joy when the plant gets made. And then later on, God talks about the city he cares for because it is so big. So things are big, big, big throughout the book of Jonah. And I don't think there's any accident that in children's Bibles in the Old Testament, you are unlikely to find an Obadiah children's section of the children's Bible, because, of course, they have to edit. But you will often find a Jonah in a children's Bible, because it's this big, larger-than-life place. And I think there's actually something quite profound going on there. I think this is a place where the Bible takes us almost into a slight fantasy world, a magic world, and says, in this magic world, we want to create a space where you begin to think about some of the deeper prejudices and issues and challenges in your life. In the same way that someone who's a play therapist will take a child to a sandpit, because, not because they want to play with sand, but in order that that sandpit can become a place where a child can think about some of the greatest fears and relationships that they have. The book of Jonah is like that. It's this cartoonish place where we get pulled into to discover more about ourselves and more about those we have prejudices against, and above all, to discover more about God.
Interesting. So it's like a kind of wonderland.
Yeah, I think so.
For us to go to. There's also a lot about perishing, isn't there?
Yeah, so one final word is perishing. So there's lots of fear of perishing in the book. The sailors are scared of perishing. The captain is scared of perishing. Later on, the king of Nineveh will be scared of perishing. What's interesting is that Jonah is not scared of perishing. He almost wants to perish. And actually, for all the jeopardy that's in the book, the only one thing ever does actually perish, which is the plant at the end. And ultimately, this is about so that people do not perish. So perishing is also a theme that's in the book.
Mm. So as we kind of plunge into chapter one, we can kind of be looking out for those key themes, those ideas, those thoughts, and always with that sense that we're entering into this magic world where our own prejudices and will be challenged, I suppose, as we do that. There's lots in here, isn't there, about God's sovereignty too, isn't there? And we'll pick that up as we move on into the second reading. Thank you so much for listening to The Outspoken Bible. Don't forget you can find more resources on the Bible 2020 theme of God's concern at our website, scottish.bible/Jonah.